The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Sharad Kutan with me and you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. Today on the show, we have with us Karim Razlan, CEO of KRA Group, which is a Southeast Asian public affairs consulting firm. Karim is also a newspaper columnist with a regional syndication. He's also the author of 5 books, including the Charitala series. Now, Karim's takedown on the election commissions on Astro Awani went viral last week, where he declared, "This kind of ridiculous rubbish is what we have to see end today." Now, coming off from that, Karim, we had many comments on our Facebook and Twitter, and a lot of them, I want to thank you all for weighing in on that, and many of them saying thank you for your candidness, and I think speaking what many people were thinking. So now, if you would like to join this conversation over the next 30 to 45 minutes, in fact, you can join us at BFM Radio, that's our Twitter handle, or tweet or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Now, let's, I think, start off, Karim, with what has been quite a roller coaster few days. But how far do you see this change of government really, I think, going to change or going to help Malaysia be truly democratic? What do you think?
Yeah. Okay, well, it's great to be here, everyone. And by the way, I'm Karim Razlan.
Not Cam Razlan.
Not Cam Razlan, not Johan Razlan. Okay, just in case anyone's confused, okay?
There is a only difference. One of you have a Dato ship, though.
And that's not me, yeah? Okay, guys, I think one of the most important things is actually it's not a legal issue. It's more a cultural issue and a social issue. It's actually beginning to expunge this kind of feudal culture from the way we conduct ourselves. And I think that reached its apogee, its height in the kind of Najib Razak era. Because, of course, you know, the former prime minister, aristocrat from very distinguished Pahang family, and kind of created a kind of court around him. So what we've really got to do, and the Pakatan ethos is very different, yeah? Even though there is a tendency with the Mahathirs to create a similar court, we've got to kind of make sure that more, shall we say, kerakyatan, that more people-centric approach, less kind of aristocratic approach, kind of comes to bear. And I think that's a kind of overarching theme. That's quite different from all the kind of Pakatan Harapan manifesto in terms of, you know, political issues.
Karim, do you think that, so when you're talking about the Pakatan ethos and the more kerakyatan, do you think that the era of elite politics is behind us?
How can that be the case when you have Tun Mahathir as Prime Minister and Anwar Ibrahim's wife as DPM? Maybe not. But the ethos, the way in which they engage, they interact, I mean, there's much more engagement now. Dr. Mahathir has to listen to people within his cabinet. This is quite different from his previous government.
Karim, you spent much of your time in Indonesia. And Indonesia is celebrating the 20th anniversary of Reformasi, the fall of the Suharto administration, the fall of the New Order regime, the 3-decades-long regime. Were there lessons? I mean, this moment that we had, you know, just a couple of days ago started 20 years ago as well. We, in fact, borrowed the slogan from the streets of Jakarta, Reformasi Total. We took it and dropped the Total, and we just had the Reformasi, you know.
Yeah.
Do you see some sort of parallels between our country and Indonesia, and what lessons have they learned the last 20 years?
Okay, I think there are very strong parallels. And obviously, maybe that's because I've spent so much time down there since Reformasi, since 98. So I felt it very strongly. And I think that's one of the key lessons to learn from that is it takes a long time for a society to readjust and find its kind of equilibrium. What we see today, and it's just a few days after the election, will not be the case necessarily in a year's time. The players now may well be replaced by people we have no idea about. So, and the whole way in which we interact
Yeah, I also think it's interesting that, you know, perhaps we could serve, and this is really kind of just blowing our own trumpet here, but we could serve as a model for what could have, what was a peaceful transition. Perhaps, you know, it's a reminder to Malaysia and our neighbours that governments can and should change from time to time and change peacefully.
Well, you know, let's face it, Malaysia was always associated with hard authoritarian, hard democracy. So bloody hell, we've really put a reboot in. And I think that's all credit to the people of Malaysia. And it sends a message across Southeast Asia, where a culture of impunity and kind of vicious nastiness from our elites is only expected.
Well, what about the question of reversals? I know it's too early in the day to talk about reversal, but
Indonesia,
yeah, I mean, because, you know, things are just in a formation and everybody's enthusiastic. What we have in Indonesia was that initial spur. I remember when Suharto fell, one of the first things that B.J. Habibie, the successor president, did was he got rid of the information ministry, you know, and you remember those kind of moves. But today, Indonesia might have the son-in-law of General Suharto return, Prabowo, potentially.
But democratically elected. It's different.
But does he represent the deep state of Indonesia? No, I mean, is there something...
Not really.
Do you think there are dangers for us?
Yeah, of course, there are always dangers. But the important thing is we achieved a reboot, the people of Malaysia, and we need to clean up some of these ridiculous legislation, Sedition Act, Universities, Colleges Act, Printing Presses Act, all of these have to be removed, yeah? And then on the economic side, a number of initiatives have to be put in place. So we got to do it.
But, you know, Karim, for the longest time, the argument about why we needed these things was something that a broad base of Malaysians accepted. It was national security. It was peace and harmony. It was racial.
Yeah, but countries change. Countries evolve. Societies change and evolve. And time has come for us to put these things behind us.
Do you think we have the courage to accept what might come with these things, a greater messiness, maybe not things are not so stable?
Well, I think actually it's quite interesting is that little contretemps over the disagreement over the formation of the cabinet. And Rafizi's statement. Mm-hmm. I think we've got to get used to more of those type of interventions.
So we asked on Twitter today whether you know, netizens out there saw the comments of Wong Chen and Rafizi Ramli as airing dirty laundry or whether they saw that speaking truth to power. And opinion was quite split. So, Karim, you think this is really just part and parcel of us growing with the democratic process?
Oh, definitely. We got to get used to it. But having said that, once you are in government, you also have to think about how what you say impacts the broader impressions of your government. So, yeah, we all, you know, transparency means, yeah, you can say anything. But don't forget, how does that show who and what you are as a government, and how does that impact it?
Do you think? Do you think that the backlash over the comments comes from a place of insecurity and worry that perhaps this new government is not as strong, fundamentally strong, as we would like it to be?
Well, of course it's not going to be as fundamentally strong.
And that's what we're afraid?
It'll take time. That's what I'm trying to say. There's going to be a period of sustained messiness. Let's hope it doesn't reach turmoil or turbulence. Such a massive reset after 60 years is only expected to cause some degree of uncertainty. And the voices of the more conservative right wing are regrouping, and they will come back and they will challenge.
And what do you think needs to be done? I mean, and say, for instance, from the side of the media, how can the media play a role in this period of transition?
Well, it's by, you know, reporting things accurately. News has to be fast and accurate. And there's obviously going to be analysis and comment. That's standard. But we also got to get rid of bad legislation. The fake news law, I think, must be expunged. It must be taken off the books. National Security Council Act. you know, printing presses, these have got to go. Don't leave them on the books. We have the window of opportunity now. Get rid of them.
Well, Dr. Mahathir said yesterday that, you know, he's not actually going to abolish them.
Yeah, I disagree with that.
Yeah, and it's just defining what false news is.
Let's face it, you know, we don't have to agree with Dr. Mahathir on everything. And we damn well have to disagree on that. You know, Dr. Mahathir was instrumental in helping to destroy our institutions. Now we expect him to put in place, with the famous focus that he has, a stronger and much more relevant set of legislation that provides for greater freedom of information and all these things.
Do you think we've put too much on Dr. Mahathir's shoulder? I mean, in some ways, people can argue that Dr. Mahathir has come to lead this particular, dramatic change on the shoulders of people like Anwar Ibrahim, Mat Sabuz, the Lim Guanings, who struggled for 20 years.
They all had to work together. They couldn't have done it alone. Dr. M couldn't have done it without, you know, Lim Guaneng and Anwar Ibrahim, and Anwar Ibrahim and Guaneng couldn't have done it without him. I think they all realize that. It's a kind of, you know, and fine, get used to it. Work together, chums. We don't want you all sniping at each other. It's so tedious.
We're speaking to Karim Razlan, the CEO of KRA Group, on The Breakfast Grill. Stay tuned because we've got more with him after this on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us right here on The Breakfast Grill. I'm Melissa Idris with Sharad Kutin, and we've got Karim Razlan, CEO of KRA Group, a Southeast Asian public affairs consulting firm. He's also a member of the International Council of the Asia Society, New York, and chairman of the Global Agenda Council of Southeast Asia for the World Economic Forum. It's silently waving to me not to mention all his accreditations, but let's just call him Karim Razlan for now, and I'd like Karim, you to respond to a comment we got from Khairi Jamaluddin, the UMNO youth chief, when we asked him whether he thinks UMNO can survive the aftermath of a loss of federal power.
Honestly, I don't know. We've never been in this situation before. So this is a new day for us. This is a new world for us. I call on all party members to stay loyal, to believe that we can rebuild. And I want to play a big role in rebuilding the party. Whatever that role may be will be determined later. But it's going to be in an environment which we've never been in before. So the honest answer to your question is I don't know. But I hope that party members, and you know, we are one of the biggest parties in parliament still. We have a big membership. And although we lost comprehensively at elections, we are still a big party with a nationwide network, and I think that's something to build on.
That was Khairi Jamaluddin, or KJ, the former Minister of Youth and Sports, and also UMNO Youth Chief, saying that he's optimistic about UMNO rebuilding and rejuvenating. Perhaps he might have a role to play, he says, in the future. What do you think about that, Karim?
Yeah, well, I don't think he was quite as upbeat as I would have liked. Because actually, I think this is an enormous opportunity for UMNO. And I think it is a superb opportunity for the younger generation. Get rid of all that crap in the senior levels of the party. There are too many old, ugly men who have got to go. There are so many bright young chaps in their 20s and 30s. They must reinvent and rejuvenate that party. Just get rid of the rubbish.
But what about the fact that this afternoon the Supreme Council is going to be meeting? They might say no contest for the top post. I mean, the top.
Yeah, but you know,
will that make it material? I mean, will that?
Listen, Sharad, these things will take time. You know, what happens a week after the election is going to be irrelevant in a month's time, a year's time. UMNO will rearrange itself, but the core lies with the membership in their 20s and 30s. They will be the ones who will reinvent this party, and they will lead it into its future.
Karim, over the last 20 years, you know, working in Malaysia, and you know...
Not very much in Malaysia,
but
yeah?
But, you know, I know you from 20 or so years ago when, you know, with Men's Review and the work you did there. And, you know, you know the Malaysian social fabric, and you know people in UMNO. Do you think they saw this coming? Do you
No.
And why is it that they didn't see it?
No. I'd say the senior leadership didn't see it coming, but many of my friends who were younger chaps in UMNO, the younger generation, knew that they were trying to promote a totally
I'll say corrupt
damaged,
Vino.
You can say that. I'm going to say deeply damaged and deeply unpopular lineup into the country, and that this would be a disaster. Once this lineup is removed and there are more, get rid of those old, ugly faces. That's
well,
a critical
one. How would the younger generation in UMNO go about doing that if
well,
you're still
I
seeing
think
them
if,
there?
It's all about winning, isn't it? Political parties are all about winning. So if you win, you're a success. Do they want to go in and continue losing? If they continue to put forward, you know, I don't want to even bring myself to name the name, some of these figures, then they deserve it. But political parties will inevitably come to the key point, which is winning elections.
Now, the question of UMNO's contributions to the nation, I know maybe it's a little too early to talk about this, because they did give us, Anwar Ibrahim, Dr. Mahathir and Azmin Ali and so on and so forth. They did give us people.
But basically, you know, Sharad, I know it's kind of fine to trash on the party, but I think so much of the stability of the past 60 years has come from there. But too much stability also creates kind of stasis and basically rotting, yeah? For so many decades, we needed that time to move on. The people of Malaysia, in their infinite wisdom, realize that. But we want that party to readjust. The Tory party in the UK has been around for hundreds of years. It's constantly changed and rebooted itself. This is UMNO's chance. They'll do it.
You know, Karim, one of the things that analysts are saying is that part of the losses of UMNO, part of the victories of Pakatan, were based on UMNO members not voting. They didn't come. Do you think they realised that what they were doing? Do you think they saw the possibility that they were consigning the party to either a very dim future or, in fact, no future?
Oh, I think you keep on saying no future, very dim future. You got it wrong. They lost an election. This is still a party that can win another election if they get rid of the current leadership.
What about the coalition as a whole, the Barisan Nasional?
Well,
you're
that's
optimistic,
a good point,
yeah,
because basically the party has got to realise that it must be the umbrella to bring together all Malaysians. So maybe UMNO has to go multiracial. Fundamentally also has to think about this kind of exclusivity of Malayness.
Well, that brings us to a question that we got on WhatsApp. Is there still a place for racial-based politics moving forward, Karim?
I think what we're seeing is a migration from racial-based politics, obviously, to religious-based politics.
Religious-based politics.
Well, look at the success of PAS, yeah? Notwithstanding the fact that everybody wrote them off, they maintained their power in Kelantan, secured it even more so, and then gained in Terengganu. That is proof that they have a very solid base.
One of the strategies going in to this election for PAS was to play kingmaker. They said explicitly they had the potential to do that in both Kedah and Perak. What I thought was interesting, Karim, was that Barisan Nasional in Perak refused to join forces with PAS. And also in Kedah, they could have complicated matters if they had joined forces with PAS. What do you understand by Barisan Nasional and UMNO's particular strategies in those two states?
Okay, I'm not totally up on it. But I would say I think there is a realization, I hope so, that really, you know, UMNO and PAS are different. One is really based on religion as its core, one on the Malay identity. And as UMNO is suffering a kind of crisis of confidence, they've at least realized that they must keep separate from PAS. Going forward, their future lies in not combining, I feel, because the challenge is going to be between a religious future, predominantly kind of Islamic Sharia-based future, and one which is a more open multiracial future. And this is going to be the divide, frankly.
You mentioned earlier, Karim, that, you know, you're expecting, I guess, the conservative right-wing voices to
they're
going to be
regroup.
Heard.
Yeah, do you think they've suddenly disappeared? No. And that's fine. That's fair enough. Let's get used to it.
But what about the... So this is kind of still on the question of pass. They've done pretty well nationally, about 18% in terms of representation, in terms of the popular vote. But they are almost non-existent in Sabah and in Sarawak.
They are non-existent.
So how is that future of, you know, Sharia-compliant, religiously orientated vision that they want to push nationally going to fly if the two major territories of the three territories that make up Malaysia don't want them or don't have them?
But it, just remember, what we're seeing is Malaysia adhering, you know, the West Coast from Johor to the north, up as far as Penang and southern Kedah, is this kind of a more multiracial, open, modern, progressive mindset. Kedah lives across to Kelantan, Terengganu. It's different, and much of Pahang. And
so that's the unfederated Malay states, basically.
Yeah, you could say that. And then, you know, Sarawak and Sabah have their own ethos. What we've got to do is to respect that, honor that, but still maintain an identity that can take us forward. In a way, Pakatan is trying that. But also Pakatan is going to be having to deal with Sarawak and Sabah is quite complicated because you have very different issues at work there.
Yeah, so what we're seeing with the political tussles in Sabah and Sarawak, do you think that this is the beginnings of, you know, ironing out whatever, I guess, complications?
Well, it's going to be very long-term process, yeah.
What would you look out for? What would be your advice,
I think,
to Pakatan?
You know, very, very important in Sarawak that Pakatan does not accept PBB. Guys like Barubian, I can remember in the last election, I actually went for his nomination and he stood in
PKR.
Limbang. He's from PKR. He's an excellent man. He must be a federal minister because he speaks for an issue of Marwa, an issue of land, which has been so badly treated by the forces in Kuching of all the native peoples in Sarawak. His aspirations and the aspirations of the people he represents must not be trampled over in the need to increase the numbers in parliament.
But there is real politic. And
there is real politic, but there's also bullshit, yeah? The issue is the natives of Sarawak are very poorly treated, especially in the interior. Barubian and all these people represent that, and they cannot be denied. People voted for them, and in large numbers, because of land. Their land has been taken away by the people in Kuching, and they want that change.
Right, the native customary land issue.
Yeah, we can say, native customary, that this is an issue of central importance to people there.
Well, okay, so we in the remaining minute that we have, Karim, what do you think we should be, how should we kind of deal with this avalanche of information, avalanche of news headlines, the anxieties that seem to be associated with them?
Yeah, because you keep telling us, you know, this is the long game, right? So this is just a period of uncertainty that will not matter a year, 2 years, 3 years from now.
I think you've got to focus on not getting too stressed out.
Calm down, everyone.
Calm down. You know, there's going to be a lot of shouting, a lot of noise. Fact of life. Take it easy.
All right. Well, we'll be back with Karim Razlan after the 8:30 news bulletin. So make sure you stay tuned to The Breakfast Grill. Karim Razlan, CEO of KRA Group, a public affairs consulting firm, with us. More with him after this. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
This is a special extended edition of The Breakfast Grill. I'm Melissa Idris with Sharad Curtin, and joining us on the show, Karim Razlan, CEO of KRA Group, a newspaper columnist as well with a regional syndication and also author of the Cerita Lah series. I'd like to invite everyone to join in the conversation on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and Twitter at BFM Radio is our handle. Now, Karim, in response to your comments about, you know, there's going to be a migration of race-based politics to religion-based politics just based on the success of PAS, we have Jahabah Sadiq tweeting in of the Malaysian Insight. Now, he says that That's too simplistic a notion. The wave of anger against Najib Abno was such that people voted for PAS in the East Coast. They benefited from the anger, not the faith. What would you have to say about that?
Well, I have to agree with Jahaba. But, you know, one of the things, maybe it's I'm, you know, a bit soft-hearted. You know, when a guy's down, I don't really want to kick him down any further. But yes, you know, let's face it, you know, Abno lost because they had as a candidate for the premiership someone who was obviously very, very unpopular in the country and became a hate figure, much equaled, because I followed the Trump election, Hillary Clinton, Trump, and Najib Razak and Dr. M. Dr. M, by calling, you know, Najib XYZ all the time, people just saw him as the Punchuri and all this, and it suppressed and depressed the Umno turnout, much as what Trump did with Hillary Clinton. But, you know, life moves on, so I don't want to be kicking someone when they're down.
But what about the fact that perhaps, you know, and the other way of looking at it is Najib presided over an ecosystem. And it's, he's not the only person who had, you know, allegedly a hand in the till. And if this goes to trial and if all the investigations start to reveal
Let's face it, you know, Dr. M's brilliance, and Dr. M is brilliant at communicating things in a very simplistic way, was to hone in. And I went to a number of Pakatan rallies, and you never heard any other name except for Najib Razak, Rosman Mansur, never heard another minister's name. There was a kind of clarity of the message which reminded me of all the Trump rallies. Mm. You know, people think that Najib Razak adopted the Trumpian approach, but no, it was really the Pakatan campaign, and they did it brilliantly.
Since we're talking about the US, a quick question again by WhatsApp. Karim, do you see Malaysia able to practice a two-party approach soon, just like the US?
Oh, I sure hope so. And I think a lot of it depends on how this UMNO gets its act together, but it will take time.
Do we want a two-party
approach? Of course
approach?
We do. I mean, I've seen how Golkar in Indonesia has totally revamped itself, how all the parties kind of came up. Parties are there, political parties, to win elections. They will find a way of getting the type of people up the front who will win elections. It will take time in UMNO, but it will happen.
Is there a place for truly radical alternatives? You know, it's what seems to have happened is Barisan Nasional used to occupy the middle ground. They used to occupy middle Malaysia, as it were. And now Pakatan Harapan occupies middle Malaysia. Is there any chance for truly different types of political thinking philosophies to inform where we're going? Or are we going to always get this middle of the road kind of politics?
No, we all want a middle of the road is what the country needs, isn't it? But I think for UMNO, it's going to be trying to figure out, do they go into the middle and start kind of attacking Pakatan on its home ground? I'd like to see that. Or do they go to the edge and kind of then embrace and, I would say, get swallowed by PAS?
Well, let's talk about Pakatan Harapan's dominance now. You know, in many states,
we have to guard against it.
What do you mean, guard against it?
Well,
and how do
we don't want
do
anyone
that?
To be dominant, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
God, we got to be critical of them, intelligent criticism, and we got to make sure that we keep them honest and that they deliver what we voted them to do. Get rid of all those acts, fake news law, get rid of it.
What about the very progressive, sophisticated states of Selangor and Penang? I'm not discounting sophistication in Perlis and other parts.
Also sophisticated,
yes,
okay?
Johor, where I come from. But you know, the important thing is, can we, apart from the revival of UMNO and Barisan Nasional, could there be new formations around, you know, people with ideas that maybe are, you know, a green party or a party that is about, you know, forming the way we think about urbanization, for instance? I mean, could we have politics driven in very different ways?
Yeah, but that you would need to have, I think, a slightly different system. We have the Westminster system, which really militates against these smaller interest groups. And that's why somebody like Maria Chin had to stand under the banner of Pakatan. Now it remains to be seen how successful she will be. I hope she is in many ways, in terms of bringing her agenda, which is a broad-based agenda and very much an open agenda, into the Pakatan and ensure into the Pakatan kind of deliverables and ensuring it happens.
You know, the thing is, the Pakatan Harapan parties have won using the first-past-the-post system. It was a disadvantage. It became to their advantage. The question is, will they dismantle the very mechanisms that put them in power? Will they, say, go for, you know, a mixed proportional representation system or some other form of democratic calculus that might actually put them,
make it more competitive for them? I'm not sure, but I think let's stick to what we have. Maybe, I think issues of redelineation have to be addressed, the malapportionment. The Westminster system has created the political structure we have now. It needs to be tinkered with to make it fairer.
Okay, so you said we want a strong opposition. We want to keep the current government honest and transparent. And, you know, we don't want dominance in any area. What do you think the role of civil society is? Because, you know, I'm thinking that civil society now will have a louder voice, perhaps a more rallying cry. What can we expect from civil society going forward?
You know, I suspect actually it'll be the opposite.
Really?
Civil society, because it's been subsumed into the political mainstream, will get kind of like, oh, why bother? Because Maria Chin's sitting there. But you're right. We've still got to keep pressing them. Give her the support to make sure, as I say, Sedition Act, Prevention of Crime Act, the University and Colleges Act, all of these things have to be taken off the books.
And what do you think about the role of the media, Karen? Because, you know, when you were on Awani calling out the EC for what they've done, I felt that that was really refreshing to hear on you know, on kind of a public mainstream media to have you know, such frank and candid views.
Because the guy had kept us waiting for hours, you know, and we were looking
like personally peeved, were you?
And we were looking like idiots on the TV studio. All of us, we were furious. And you know, when you're looking like idiots in front of millions of Malaysians, you have to speak for yourself, but you're also inadvertently speaking for the rest of the country. And that's the most important thing.
We have a tweet by Tun Faizal who has weighed in saying, walaupun tak agree with some of his points, but okay lah, Karim Razlan gave fair views on BFM, especially on Tun M and the current government. This is Tun Faizal of the UMNO social media position.
Well, UMNO's got to reinvent itself. Just get on with it.
Well, you know, what's interesting is in the way in which the old figures are thinking about the politics of the time. Tan Keng Liang, I believe from Gerakan, is now supporting Rafizi Ramli in his criticisms of the, you know, of Tun Mahathir's leadership. Really exciting times ahead when people kind of realign themselves.
Okay, so in the little time we have left, Karim, I'd like to ask you what exactly you think you'll be watching out for. You know, you say to us that this is a time of transition. This is a time of uncertainty. Yeah. Calm down. We will get there in the long run. But in the next few weeks, what will you be watching out for to make sure that we achieve that peaceful transition?
Well, I think critical is cabinet formation. How do the rest of the seats get apportioned? Then it's looking at the agenda. What will the Pakatan government be prioritizing? Clearly, the economic situation needs to be addressed. I think the final point is, you know, and I see this in a regional sense. Most of my work is outside Malaysia. Malaysia is going through, as would have gone through, a radical reboot from really being a near pariah. Sorry, everybody. The country has gone to being a darling, not just in Southeast Asia, but globally. And, you know, the ordinary people of Malaysia did it themselves. And I think, you know, we deserve to have a pat on the back, go and have a teh tarik, go and have a nasi lemak and enjoy yourselves. Take it easy. Don't get stressed by Rafizi and all these people. You know, don't get wound up. Go and live life. Go and enjoy things. But follow and, if necessary, intervene, interject, press your MPs and your wakil rakyat.
Thank you so much. Well said there, Karim Razlan. We've been speaking to Karim Razlan, CEO of KRA Group, Southeast Asian public affairs consulting firm. Thanks for joining us on The Breakfast Grill today. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thanks.
I'm Melissa Idris with Sharad Kutan, BFM 89.9.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.